Good afternoon, everyone, wherever you are today. Thanks very much for joining our latest webinar entitled Governing AI, Building Trust, Managing Risk, and Staying Compliant. And this is one of the series we have on AI and AI security in the modern era. If some of you attended our webinar last week, we covered the big picture around all the different types of risks and threats that need to be managed relating to AI. And we called out there that governance being one key component that you should have in place. And with that in mind, today we're going to dive a lot deeper, specifically into the topic of governing AI. And with that, I'm delighted to be joined by Sean Brennan. Sean is our GRC practice manager, and therefore the perfect person to elaborate in a lot more detail about the considerations around governance, risk, and compliance in relation to AI. My name is Brian Martin. I'm Director of Product Management at Integra360. I'll be giving a little introduction, and then I'll hand over to Sean for the main content. So just moving ahead, just to give a little bit of an introduction. What we can see is in recent years, a dramatic rise in the usage of AI in all its forms across most organizations. So obviously the big explosion happened with the advent of ChatGPT back around 2023. But now we're up at in the region of 88% of organizations are using at least or AI in at least one business function. And many organizations, in fact, nearly two-thirds still in the pilot or experimentation phases. So many charging ahead, but also many still adopting, but in the early stages of adoption, and haven't only a small minority have fully scaled AI across the entire enterprise. And if you just moved on there to the next one, what I can see here is that the growth is rapid, the end user spending is rapid. It's been growing on an average of 66, nearly 67% per annum over, since 2023 specifically, and fueled by rapid model innovation. Every month or two, there's a new release coming out of the frontier models and rising enterprise adoption, and also a rise in domain-specific AI systems as well. But with adoption brings challenges. So moving on to the next one, there are a number of challenges, just question marks are still out there around the ROI, the return on investment, and the value. Obviously, there's a lot of spend involved with adopting AI, and sometimes it's not easy to translate that into the return you're getting on that. There is in management. So on the one hand, there's a big push and impetus to adopt AI, but if the organization isn't ready, it's not just about trying out a new tool, it's a whole new way of working potentially, new business processes, and that requires more of a change management approach. And there's a lack of literacy and skills amongst many employees, and how do you cope with that? And that's both to get the returns, but also from a security perspective, which brings on to that, I suppose, where we're mostly focused on, which is security and governance concerns being one of the impediments to really embracing it and getting the return on investment. So just the last little bit of intro before I hand over to Sean is on the next slide. So in the first slide, I showed 88% have adopted it. So actually, it's actually around 95, 96% either have adopted or plan to. So it's close to 100% of organizations that are Most have already adopted to some degree, maybe not across the board, but certainly in some places. And almost everybody that haven't done it already are in the process of planning to do it. But by the end of this year, research shows that at least 80% of unauthorized transactions, AI transactions, will be caused by internal violations of policies, oversharing, unacceptable use, misguided AI behavior, and not necessarily malicious attacks. We talked last week about the fact that there's a threat from threat actors using AI, and that is definitely something that we're seeing needs to be taken seriously. But from a perspective of the usage of AI and this mass adoption, the big focus here is actually the unauthorized and the misuse of AI and the risks that presents. So before I hand over to Sean, we just wanted to test the waters with the audience and see where people are in terms of their adoption of risk, governance, risk, and compliance. So we'd like to ask, how advanced is AI governance within your organization? So, is it already mature and established in development, but not fully refined, very early stages, or really just starting to learn about it? So if you could give your answer as best you can as to where is AI governance within your organization. And we'll just hold on a few seconds just to let people get their answers in. And then we'll share that in a moment. And that will set the stage for Sean to talk through how to move forward in this whole area. So, can we see some results? Have they come in yet? Okay.
Yes, thank you, Brian.
So we can
So
see
let's
here
call
that
it.
it's kind of in the middle. Most people are split between in early stages or in development, but not fully refined. And really, it's your perfect normal distribution, if you like, and only 5% either in the mature stage or only just starting to learn about it. So with that, I'll hand over to Sean to set the stage around governing AI.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for that introduction. An overview of adoption in AI across organizations. Thanks to everybody for joining. Again, my name is Sean Brennan. I'm GRC Practice Manager with Integrity 360, coming up in 9 years now. So just looking at those results from that poll, I think that aligns to what I expect the audience to be for this presentation. This presentation is focused on the early stages of AI governance, whether companies are just starting off, have just started, rather than companies which may already have a mature AI governance program in place. So I hope throughout this there you can take something and apply it in practice. That would be the success kind of criteria for myself, but there are a couple of items throughout this that you can take back into an organization and get a start in AI governance. Just to start off, to talk about trustworthy AI, or what are the characteristics, or you could say principles of trustworthy AI. And this is according to NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. So these seven areas include to be valid and reliable. So it works as intended and it's consistent in its output, and there are known limits. And we need to apply qualitative and quantitative measurements in order to define success criteria to ensure that AI is valid and reliable. That it's safe, reduces risk of physical, psychological, economic, or social harm. This will be more so now as you see AI enter into kind of OT environments where there's a huge threat to the physical health of a human being in operational technology environments. And we're going to see AI creep in more. And that's why we have regulations now to ensure that there are certain processes where AI cannot be used. If you look at the EU AI Act, it's secure and resilient. So security withstands misuse, any type of attack or unexpected conditions. So secure and resilient. It's accountable and transparent. So there are owners. So we understand what processes are going through AI or where AI is used in processes. We have accountable owners for that process, and evidence is available in terms of ownership and accountability. It's explainable, so relevant people can understand outputs and limits. If you give an example, so it would be an SME in an area could understand the output from the AI, such as an engineer, if AI has been used to generate some sort of engineering calculations, that engineer, it is understood by that individual. Privacy enhanced, so personal data, sensitive attributes are protected. Again, when we think about AI, we think about the EU AI Act, but AI impacts or has a lot of different regulations which are relevant, such as GDPR and how that personal data is processed. There's fair bias and managed, so harmful bias identified, assessed, and mitigated. So it's not used to select certain individuals based on advice. Okay. One thing I did want to note here, that AI governance, security is part of that, but AI governance at its heart is not owned by a security function. It's not owned by an information security manager or owner. It is cross functional. And all the different areas here, you can see seven characteristics which require different SMEs from different areas, and should be managed and owned at a kind of accountable, obviously at the board level, but owned then on the kind of C-suite across all functions. When we talk about risk, the real risk is between the adoption and the governance. So as Brian showed earlier, that increase in adoption over time, and that's going to continue. I don't think anybody is surprised by that. AI is in our everyday lives now, and sometimes we may not even know it. It could be in the background of applications we're using on the web, on websites, but it's everywhere now, and it's going to be increasing adoption. And that the difference between the governance and adoption is going to increase unless we get a control and we put some governance in place. Ultimately, we don't want to slow innovation, but we do want to make sure there's accountability, and the decisions are risk-based, and we have evidence as well to showcase everything that we're doing. One point just to note on procrastination when I talk about AI, I've been noted every day AI adoption outpaces governance, that gap is getting bigger and bigger. Implementing an AI governance program, or if we think about AI implementing it across the organization, can become quite overwhelming. But all we need to do is start small. There are a couple of quick wins, actions that we can do to start. And once we get a start, I always find when you start something, you start small, your thought process gets more structured and you gain momentum and progress, and you can see that path to success. So again, from today, if there's one or two of the actions that I call out that you can implement today, that's a start, and progress will follow. We talk about threats. There are numerous threats at different levels, organizational to technical. Three very apparent ones, data exposure. This goes hand in hand as well with shadow AI. A lot of companies are losing control of where their data is going and what AI applications they're being entered into. When people across business units are able to access unauthorized AI applications and input sensitive data. In most cases, the free AI tools that we see online, they have in their terms and conditions that they are allowed to take control of that data and use it to teach their AI or their LLM to enhance it. So We just need to be careful. We need to put guardrails around the data, and we can talk about how we can control that. Third-party AI, again, as AI is in every organization now, everybody's using it. So our third parties may be apparent, it may not be apparent, but we need to put AI governance now into our third-party risk management program. We need to start looking at what third parties are doing with your data, how they're processing it through AI. And then the data that's coming back to you is the integrity of that data can be relied upon. Shadow AI, I think this is a very common one and a big one for a lot of organizations, is again, shadow AI is the uncontrolled or the lack of visibility on applications around a business. If someone in one department just goes on a website, some AI function, and uses that to process data. We need to take control of that, so that no unsanctioned tools are used or no unauthorized tools. And there's guardrails again that we can put in place to lock down or to mitigate the threat of shadow AI. So across here, we want to, from data exposure, third-party AI, shadow AI, we want to be able to inventory what AI systems we're using, what processes they're used for. We want to be able to classify that data. We want to get assurance around the vendors. We want to have an approved list of tools and applications that can be utilized across the organization. And we want to be able to evidence across these. So what good looks like in terms of governance, we can see it. We know what AI applications are across our organization. We know what processes they support, and we can have a process for managing the requests for new AI applications into an organization so that the business can innovate and grow. We want to classify, we want to protect the data, we want to be able to classify that data and possibly implement DLP or data loss prevention tools as guardrails in order to keep control of the data, because we can't protect what we can't see. We want to have one view of all AI suppliers. So again, in our third-party risk management programs, in our inventory, we want to now identify which ones of these suppliers, from critical to low risk, what ones are using AI to process your data and everything else that goes with that in terms of doing your due diligence around AI on the third party, your contractual requirements that you need to put in place as well. And we also have clear responsibility. So ultimately, the board have accountability, but below that, we need to have responsibility across all the processes that AI is used for and be clear on what the risks are and what we're doing to reduce that risk. So we're clear individual responsibility across different functions. So in terms of a journey, what we can do in terms of steps, first thing is we can't govern what we can't see. We need to be able to discover. We need to be able to find what AI, again, what AI solutions and what processes are used. We can perform assessments against industry standards and frameworks. So we have ISO 42001, which is certifiable. And we have NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, AI Risk Management Framework. So these are widely recognized frameworks and standards. We can put then target operating models in place based on the assessment that we've completed. So that assessment gives us a view of how mature we are in our AI governance program. We can set where we want to get to. We can set who owns what recommendations or opportunities for improvements. We track all that, leading into being able to sustain and demonstrate compliance. So we're able to gather evidence and maintain compliance against regulatory requirements. So talk about discovery. So the first thing, again, as I said, you can't protect or you can't govern what you can't see. There are a number of different ways to understand what AI solutions are being used. From a technology, technologies there that can highlight applications that are AI enabled, such as Defender for Cloud. It can show you the SaaS applications with AI. Another way is in our BCM program, in our BIAs, we can update our BIA methodologies now to understand, okay, you have this process, these sub-processes, and the assets or the solutions you supporting those processes of these solutions, which ones are AI. So it's another way to be able to gather. Or we can simply send out questionnaires or sit down with function owners to get a real understanding of what's been used, with the ultimate goal of actually getting a register in place. Again, this is a regulatory requirement, is to have an AI inventory, review of AI systems and processes, and it's an important piece to the rest of your program. So if there's one thing you can do, it's just to get a start on creating an AI inventory, whether it's even an Excel sheet or you're using some sort of GRC solution, but get a start documenting it down, work with your IT team, looking at the technologies in place that can give you that visibility, talk to your business functions, understand what they're using, and get that in an inventory. Once you have all these inventories, then you'll be able to risk tier each one in terms of what the process risk tier is. Again, under EU AI Act, processes have different risk tiers, and depending on what severity, it depends on what you can and can't do. But that is the first step, really, is to get an inventory of AI solutions in place. When we have that inventory, you can document the process owners. As I said, the tier, the risk tier, the criticality. We can understand the data flow, if vendors involved, where that data is flowing. And we have an overview then of risk and what we need to do next. So I've noted before about NIST AI RMF, so this industry framework around AI risk management. And it is made up of four core functions: govern, map, measure, and manage. Again, we're talking about governance today, but it is a very good framework to align to have a structure in place. Govern is made up of then 19 subcategories, talking about design from policies and processes and having your inventory in place. Talking about the accountability and training. And training's quite an important piece that we'll come into in a moment. The workforce and oversight, risk culture and escalation, stakeholder engagement, and third-party supply chain management. So what we looked at earlier, we talked about discovery, looking what's in place. The next step is to do that assessment, is to assess the gaps, understand where the risk lies and what actions you need to take to become more aligned with NIST AI RMF. And aligning with NIST or ISO 42001 is another one. These certifiable standards will help you align to regulations like the EU AI Act. Again, you can see here we just have some mapping of the EU AI Act across the NIST functions, govern, map, measure, and manage. So again, it just demonstrates that by aligning to a framework, this framework helps you align to the EU regulation on AI. If you open up the EU AI Act in itself and it's a PDF, it is quite a long, comprehensive document. However, the majority of that does not actually apply directly to the organization. There's a lot about governance around from the EU and putting a board in place, and then governance around the member states. So just by applying this framework gives you a good structure and a clear view of what controls you need to be putting in place. And just some evidence that kind of from your NIST assessment, crossing to the AI Act readiness in terms of evidence. So under the governing output, we have inventory and ownership. And then we have evidence of the scope, the roles and responsibilities, the intended purpose, and the risk classification from applying that in NIST, your risk tolerance and policy. You should have in place then evidence of risk management system and any exceptions in process, training and accountability, so AI literacy, human oversight and role clarity. Should be able to demonstrate evidence for this and third-party governance. So you'll have your third-party due diligence assessments completed and AI documentation, so general purpose AI documentation, monitoring and review cadence, so logs, monitoring, incident reporting, and corrective action. So from each control in NIST or subcategory, there should be an associated trail of evidence that can demonstrate that it's been applied. So we talk about governance, we keep talking about governance. So when we talk governance, we need to put in place committees, a governance committee. Again, I talked about earlier that the EU AI Acts or AI governance in itself is not so solely owned by a security function. It should be chaired by an executive sponsor, and that depends on your organizational structure. That could be a chief risk officer, could be a chief information officer, could be a compliance officer. Ideally, someone that has input into the board in terms of reporting into the board directly. They should be the chair or the executive sponsor. And then that could be supported with around security technology. So your CISO, your security function, your infrastructure team. We talk about risk and governance, could be a risk team or governance, risk and compliance, your third-party risk management team, privacy and legal, DPO, and your legal team. So this would be a quick win. An action to take is to put this governance committee in place, where the chair, the executive sponsor, is setting the direction, each area then has its own responsibility. And if we've mapped that back, each of these areas we can map back to things like the seven principles at the start that we spoke about. So if there's anything you can take from this, is to create that AI governance committee and to make a start. So literacy, this is a EU AI Act obligation. It is mandatory. We need to understand the level of literacy across an organization, across all functions. So how well people understand AI and what's really beneath it and what's going on and what it's doing and the risks involved from certain activities or if it fails. So we actually need to gauge that across the organization. There's different ways we can do that. So we can send out surveys, ask questions to each function, and then we can risk map functions according to their level of literacy, whether that's they are high, medium, or low risk, and you can then prioritize in terms of your training efforts where you need to focus and stage that training program over time, starting from your higher priority area. But this is a EU AI Act requirement, and we need to be able to evidence that. And that evidence is those surveys, and it's the findings from those surveys and what we were doing about that to ultimately increase literacy and reduce risk over the organization. So we went through just a couple of actions to take from this deck. I know very quick we went over, but I just wanted to kind of get a overview of how to start and what quick actions we can take, whether it's 30 to 60 days. And there are four priority actions that we can look at. One is getting that governance committee in place that we just spoke about, cross-functional and multidisciplined committee. Get an AI inventory in place. So through technology or questionnaires or your business impact assessments or sitting down with the functions is start building out that AI inventory of systems and processes and assigning classification and risk tiers associated with those. We want to get literacy baseline, AI literacy baseline. So by sending out our surveys or quizzes, we can understand what functions require training and prioritize that. And we can have evidence back packs. So by performing that gap assessment against NIST to RMF or ISO 42001, we can then understand we can make a roadmap for implementation, and we can evidence against controls. So hopefully you can walk away today with a kind of an understanding of what you'll walk away with if you can put these things in place, is kind of combined technical and behavioral picture of your AI risk across the organization, people's literacy across function by function, a prioritized governance roadmap and target operating model, but performing that gap assessment, having that governance committee in place, and a board-ready assurance you can take upstairs. So providing that board a level of assurance that there is a governance in place and a roadmap to alignment with regulatory requirements. Okay. Okay, so Brian, I'll hand over to you now. What I'll say is,
Thanks,
if
Sean.
any, yeah, if anyone has any questions, we'll bring them up in a moment. But if you want to reach out directly, either to have a discussion, again, this was more suited to getting a start around AI with some kind of quick wins, practical steps to take. So thank you.
Thanks, Sean. And I think it might be a good time to run phone number two, which is we asked earlier about governance maturity. And then, Sean, you talked a lot about the importance of visibility. So we want to check in, how advanced is AI usage visibility within your organization? So is it all fully automated through technology, maybe manual means, some visibility, but don't have the full picture, or really don't have any means active to collect that visibility. So again, we'll give people a quick minute to respond to that poll. A couple of things I should have mentioned at the start. Firstly, that there is a Q&A button at the bottom. So we've seen some questions come in already. We're about to go to the Q&A section. So if you haven't done so already, please put in any questions that you might have. So we'll just give it another couple of seconds and give people a chance to answer that. Okay, so let's have a look at the results so far. Okay, so we've got, so it's heavily weighted towards some or no visibility, with only 39% either doing it manually or automated. Automated at the moment, very low percentage, only 6%, which is very interesting for me because there are so many technical solutions coming on the market now to provide that visibility quite easily. So it's interesting, yeah, that people are still haven't fully embraced some of those options, which is quite interesting. Okay, so interesting. So we're going to move to the Q&A section in one moment. Just before we do, I just Sean, can you share the upcoming webinars or else just on that webinar slide that we have? It's just while people are putting in their questions, we normally like to say what's coming next.
Yeah, see it there.
Not seeing it yet. Maybe I'm looking at the wrong thing here, sorry. I'm not seeing it there, so I'll just speak to it
Okay.
in the
Yeah.
spirit of time. So, on the 30th of July, we have a webinar with Venari Security on post-quantum cryptography. What is the hype? What's the reality? And the roadmap for enterprises to get to post-quantum cryptography ready, which is becoming more and more of a hot topic. And if you go to our events website, you'll see a full list of all upcoming events and webinars available. And with that in mind, let's go then to the Q&A. So again, if anybody has any questions, please feel free. So in the meantime, we'll take a look at some of the ones that have come in already. So one here asking the question, should we release AI technology to all employees or manage the deployment through project initiatives? So I guess a more kind of blanket release or targeted based on individual use cases than projects that have been defined. So do you have a view on that, Sean?
You just need to understand what it's been used for. Again, if we look at the EU AI Act, there are different risk tiers. So it's not, if you're deploying it out, you need to understand what it's been used for, the data that it's going through it. You need to risk tier it, and according to that, then there are certain do's and don'ts. So it's not like just release it and let anyone do what they want. You need to understand the processes. It's been used for.
Yeah, no, I would add to that that given the results of that survey about visibility, that actually very few organizations have the ability to see what's actually being used. So even in advance of releasing, what you'll find is people have started adopting it anyway, and you're into that whole realm of shadow AI and the risks that presents.
And as you know, there's likely already the capability from technology you may already have to get that visibility. And you just need to look into it because it can give you good insight. Again, like Defender for Cloud. And again, it is a regulatory requirement to have an inventory of AI solutions and processes.
There is a related question here is why don't we just block all unsanctioned AI usage? So get our hands on that ability and just, unless we have specific projects or specific policy to allow something, that we just block everything else, stop people using it. Why don't we do that?
Well, you do want to get to that, absolutely. Organizations are hugely exposed because of shadow AI at the moment. They don't know where the data is going, especially if there's no DLP solution in place. So ultimately, we want to get to a point where you have an approved list of AI applications and everything else is blocked, and have processes in place for the request of new AI services or whether it's an application. Or a web application. So yeah, ultimately we do need to get control, and we do need to lock down unauthorized AI applications.
I think also just given the mass adoption, and so 90x percent of organizations either are using it or plan to use it. If we just pull the kill switch, it's gonna make for interesting discussions because on the one hand, there's this massive drive to adopt in order to embrace the productivity and economic gains of AI, and on the other hand, we're saying you're not allowed to use it.
Yeah, and the literacy, that AI literacy, again, any EU AI requirements is crucial. It's talking to the business, understanding their level of literacy, providing the training so that they understand the risks and they understand why these controls are put in place, and they understand the processes to require new AI solutions. So that understanding across the business and embedding it in the culture is crucial.
There's a question about the use of statistics. Are they skewed by the fact that most solutions now come with bundled AI products? And I see this like pretty much every enterprise application to speak of has AI embedded in it. So therefore, like if you're an enterprise software vendor, and you don't have AI in your product, then probably you should fire the development team, the product management team, or both, because everyone needs an AI story around their product set. So the fact that adoption is now 90 something percent, is that not just being informed by the fact that all the, these applications have embedded AI anyway. So I probably would have to go back to the actual detail of how the questions were phrased, you know, when those surveys were done. But my sense of the intent of it is not just that they're getting it by default as part of enterprise applications that they've traditionally used, but actually that they're adopting it and embracing it in itself, you know what I mean, to either the frontier models, the public models, and also either investigating or adopting, you know, developing their own models. They're using Copilot, they're using Anthropic, they're using OpenAI or whatever to perform functions that traditionally they weren't using it for. And that's my sense of it, but I don't know what you think, Sean, whether
No,
you would
agree.
stick by that.
Yes, yeah. Look, it's everywhere. It is in everything these days. Whether you see it or you don't.
You talked about the two frameworks, kind of the useful ones being ISO 42001 AI management system and then the NIST AI risk management framework. Would you advocate using both or one over the other, or what are the criteria which you would use to use one other or both of them?
Well, I think the key difference, ISO is obviously certifiable and expect. So obviously we work with clients in implementing 42001 and getting them to a stage one readiness. And we're seeing an increasing requirement for certification. And I do expect next year that it will rapidly increase, where businesses are asking their third parties, like they would ask security questions, and for their 27001 certificate. I see it now to be a norm. Okay, now I want your, have you got 42001? Whereas NIST is not certifiable. So ISO is a standard, and it is a life cycle based on the Plan, Do, Check, Act, and NIST is essentially a framework. So it depends on the business. It's really on the business requirements. They map over about 70% of each other. ISO has some different things in it, which are standard across all ISO standards. So it's really on the business requirements. You're currently probably either aligning to ISO 27001 for a given reason or NIST cybersecurity framework. So I
So
would
would you
see.
say, depending on your starting posture, like if I'm already ISO 27001, ISO 9000, maybe for a service organization like us, ISO 20,000, then it makes more logical sense to just, you get a lot of efficiencies because you're already doing a lot of the stuff you need to do for 42001. Whereas if you're interested in NIST alignment, then you might be better off going down that route.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because with ISO, those first few clauses, are standardized. So risk management, and then you go to 42001, you're talking about AI risk management. And obviously you can incorporate them into
Things like your management review that you have to do anyway, you might as well, if you can just incorporate the AI piece into the
AI,
same management review and things like that.
So if you're 27001, there's a reason for that, whether that's competitive edge or an investor requirement. In the next year, you're probably going to get the same requirement around 42001.
In terms of the EU AI Act, is that are there fines that you are liable for if you don't comply? And you know, and from a governance perspective, what are the things that could put you at risk of fines if you haven't done them?
Yes. Yeah. I believe the highest is 35 million or 7% of turnover if you are operating on a prohibited process, or the highest tier. There's a tier. Remember, we talked about the processes and how AI is used and risk tiering that process. The highest level is prohibited under EU AI Act. Again, this comes back to safety. If you can think about it, in medical devices or in transport, there are certain things we do not want AI to make decisions on. And you can be fined up to 35 million or 7% of global turnover.
And when you talked earlier about your mandated to provide AI literacy to your staff, is that punishable with fines if you don't do it?
Any non-compliance with any with regulations is, you can be penalized for that. And that literacy is a requirement. If you looked at, if you're audited and found you have not aligned to that regulatory requirement, yes, they could penalize.
But obviously the severity of the fine might be commensurate with
The risk.
the risk. So, for example, if you've put AI in to manage a critical operational process that put lives at risk, for example, then you'd be more to it than maybe the education piece might be more critical within those business critical processes and people around that space, whereas in other areas it might attract a lower fine, for example, if you were non-compliant in those areas. But who knows? You never know until you actually see the test cases coming through and how the enforcement actually is conducted as well.
Another question. Just
We're
one
coming
more
up on time.
question
I
there,
don't
I
have
think
any
is.
more questions. Sean, did you want to say something there?
I see one more there. Is there
Or just came in.
how
Cool.
does AI use relate to NIS2? So the NIS2 regulation. So as we pointed out earlier, the EU AI Act is not the only regulation impacted or where use of AI could misalign you to the requirements. So NIS2 is absolutely where AI is used for a critical process in an organization as a critical service provider. Ultimately, there's a risk there if that AI fails or if that third party using the AI fails, what the impact is to that organization, and whether the organization can still operate its services. So it relates to all regulations, NIS2, GDPR, DORA, the Digital Operations Resilience Act. It's all of it comes back to risk again. So it's just looking at the risk. Okay, we have this AI solution, it supports this process. What is the risk if that AI solution gives me the wrong results? We can't trust the integrity, it's biased. Or it becomes unoperational, it goes down. So what is that risk? So on every risk register now, there should be AI should be up front.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, whereas NIS2 doesn't exactly call out specific AI requirements, if AI is used in any of the processes, then all the same requirements around security controls, resilience, etc., all apply. So it's more, it impacts your wider environment and therefore comes in scope in that way.
Because ultimately, these regulations, they're there to protect us just as general citizens. And that all comes down to, again, risk. Everything we do, it comes down to risk. And regulations are there to try to reduce the risk to us as an individual or as a citizen.
So just to finish off, Sean, if you could give the audience one or two key takeaways that you saw the maturity levels across the two polls we had, what would you recommend people take away and really look at in their own organizations in the coming month?
So like as we went through the slides, and there was four pieces there, not complex in terms of what to do. So the thing is, as I said at the start, is start small, just get some quick wins and progress will come. And that is things like start an AI inventory of what you know. Even if it's what you use today, just start, get something on an Excel sheet. Make a start, and that will build up over time, obviously. And then, get that governance kind of form, a committee, a design authority in place, with the relevant kind of SMEs. Understand the AI literacy across the organization and where you need to focus your efforts in terms of training. And that will help embed, the AI risk culture across the organization and be more open to understanding why certain controls are going in place. And then the other one, which is a little bit bigger of a job, is performing a gap assessment against either NIST, CS or AI RMF or 42001. Still not a difficult task. It's not, these are quick wins still. They're not, I'm not talking about implementing some technology or a complex DLP program. So yeah, there's four quick wins there.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's really nice, tangible takeaways. And I'd like just to reiterate some one other thing that you said at the start, which I think is crucial, which is governance is not the exclusive responsibility and purview of the security department or the security leadership. So if someone comes to you and says, "What are you doing about AI governance?" then the answer should be, "Well, we think we should set up a governance, but it needs executive sponsorship. It needs the right composition of which we will play an important role. It's not exclusively within the purview or the control just of the security team." All right. With that, I'll say thanks to Sean for presenting today, and thanks to the audience and everybody for attending. We hope you got something out of it, and by all means, get in touch if you want to follow up on any aspect of that. Thanks again, and have a great day.